The doors burst open and parents streamed in. Sophie couldn't breathe as she scanned the faces, desperate to find Grady and Edeline. Dex squeezed her shoulder and told her it would be okay no matter what, but she barely heard him. She'd found Grady and Edeline, and their faces were unreadable as they searched the room, not seeing her as she shoved toward them. She was halfway there before she locked eyes with Grady. A huge grin lit up his face. "You passed!" he shouted over the crowd. A hysterical laugh erupted from her lips as she ran the rest of the way and threw her arms around them. When her brain caught up, she wondered if she'd crossed a line. But their arms wrapped around her, and when they let her go, their eyes were misty.
"I really passed?" she asked, needing to hear it again. "Even alchemy?"
"You got a 79 on your purification. Still room for improvement, but within passing range."
She squealed, hugging them again. Grady grinned.
"I'm sensing you're happy about this."
She laughed so hard, tears streamed down her face. But she didn't care. She passed. She could stay at Foxfire. Sure, she still had to face Bronte and the council in 5 months about permanent enrollment. But right now, she was going to celebrate. She raced back to the table and threw her arms around Dex. "I couldn't have done this without you." His face was tomato red when she let go, and she couldn't help giggling. Everyone congratulated her, except Keith, who leaned in and whispered,
"Told you so,"
when his dad wasn't looking. All her friends had passed their exams. In fact, it looked like most of the school had. A few parents had to comfort sobbing prodigies, but everyone else was tossing confetti and partying. Unfortunately, that included Stina. Her face twisted into a sneer when she noticed Sophie celebrating. Then she rolled her eyes and stomped away. Sophie giggled. She wanted to stay for the party, but she could tell Grady and Edeline were a little overwhelmed. She ran back to the atrium to pick up Keith's gift, so she would be ready to go home. Inside her locker, she found a giant box of mood candy, a small black cube, and a note. For the mysterious Miss F. "If you don't relax, this candy will always taste bitter. So snap out of it. And try to stay out of detention. K." The candy tasted like sugar plums, and inside the black cube, she found a round silver pendant with a cobalt blue crystal in the center. The candy turned sour. Since when did Keith give her jewelry? He didn't like her. She wouldn't finish the thought. There was no way a guy like Keith would ever, could ever. Why was she thinking about this? Morella's boy craziness must be rubbing off on her. It was just a necklace. He probably gave them to all the girls. She didn't know what to do with it, so she shoved the pendant to the back of her locker and was glad she didn't see Keith before she left. She needed to figure out how to thank him for such a strange present. Thankfully, Keith didn't bring it up at dinner that night. He was more interested in teasing her about Valen, or teasing Fitz about all the girls who gave him crush cuffs, wristbands embroidered with their names, hoping he'd wear them and show the whole school he liked them. Sophie couldn't decide which was more annoying. Halfway through the feast of epic proportions, a dark-haired guy rushed into the room and sank into an empty chair. He was a vanisher, blinking in and out of sight with every step.
"Sorry I'm late, Mom,"
he said as Della brought him a platter of food.
"I got held up at customs."
Mom? Fitz and Bianna had an older brother? How did she not know that? Same wavy hair, same square jaw, but he had Della's pale eyes. He was also ridiculously good-looking, but he clearly worked hard to look good. Every hair was gelled to perfection. He was built like he went to the gym twice a day, and his ornate cape was immaculate, not as over-the-top as Lady Galvin's, but headed that direction.
You must be the famous Sophie Foster,
he said, smiling at her.
I'm Alva.
She ignored Keith as he snickered at the word, famous. I didn't realize there was another brother.
I see my family talks about me a lot.
No, I'm sorry,
It's fine. That's what I get for moving out. Out of sight, out of mind.
He winked at Della.
I guess I need to stop by for dinner more often.
We know you're busy, Della told him, rumpling his hair as she brought him a glass of fizzleberry wine.
Yeah, busy juggling two girlfriends,
Keith interrupted. Alvar grinned.
Three.
Three? Della's voice was as horrified as her expression. Alvar, that's awful.
Are you kidding? It's awesome,
Keith corrected.
You're my hero.
Alvar beamed, and Della glared at both of them.
How are things with the ogres?
Alden asked Alvar, changing the subject.
Drama. They're not happy about the smoke. Like it's our fault the humans can't put out their piddly little fires. I can't believe they haven't learned to make quick snuff yet.
What fires? Sophie asked, not missing the way Alden tensed at her question.
Just some wildfires, Alden answered after a second.
Yes,
Alvar added, swallowing his wine in one gulp.
And they're certainly not worth sending emissaries to investigate.
He shot Alden a pointed look. Sophie's breath caught. Alden had told her he was only sent to investigate suspicious things. Are they burning white hot again?
Yeah. How did you know?
Alvar asked, frowning.
Never mind, Alden interrupted. And why have you been keeping an eye on me?
He asked Alvar.
I tend to do that when I hear my father's off chasing imaginary enemies. Please tell me you don't buy the conspiracy theories.
Certainly not without proof.
Alden's voice was hard.
But you would be a fool to believe it's not a possibility.
You really believe the Black Swan exists?
Yes, I've seen their handiwork myself.
Sophie watched them stare each other down, wishing she were allowed to read their minds. Something about the Black Swan felt familiar. Alvar shook his head.
Well, I don't buy it.
That's what that symbol was, Sophie said as her memories pieced together.
Symbol? Alden asked.
Sophie flushed as she realized she had everyone's undivided attention. Just something I saw on some scrolls Grady had. There was a black, curved swan's neck at the bottom. Alvar snorted.
Ah, yes. The sign of the swan. What a bunch of nonsense.
Alden said something, but Sophie's racing heart drowned out his words. The sign. The curve of the swan's neck matched the pattern of the fires that wrapped around San Diego. Quinlan had even called it the sign, which meant the fires had something to do with the Black Swan, whatever that was. What's Project Moonlark? She asked quietly. Alden dropped his fork.
How do you know that term?
It was on those scrolls. Grady was surprised I could read it. He said the words were written in cipher runes. The silence felt so heavy. It pressed on her shoulders. But she held Alden's gaze, waiting for his answer.
That's classified,
he finally replied. Sophie sighed. She was getting tired of important things being classified.
It's also a hoax,
Alvar added.
But what's this about a cipher? And why would Grady have scrolls about the Black Swan?
Sophie was wondering the same thing herself.
Grady used to look into certain things, back when he was active in the nobility,
Alden explained.
So why does he still have them?
Alvar pressed. And why was he reading them so recently? Sophie wondered.
Enough, Alvar. This conversation is over, and everything that's just been said is classified. Is that understood?
Alden waited for everyone at the table to nod,
Then his eyes met Sophie's. I know you find this all very interesting, Sophie, but you need to understand. Any unauthorized investigation into these subjects will land you in deep trouble with the council. So no more questions, okay?
Sophie nodded, her head buzzing with fear and frustration. She couldn't shake the feeling that all of this had something to do with her. Maybe even with how her brain could do such weird things. But she had too much to lose. Too many things the council could take away if she upset them. So she took a deep breath and focused on her plate. Keefe nudged her.
Earth to Foster, Della asked you what you're doing over the break.
Sorry. She shook her head, trying to snap back to the present. I'm not sure yet.
I hope you'll spend some time over here.
Alden glanced at Bianna. Bianna nodded. Anytime she wants to come over.
Then I'll be here as much as I can, Sophie said, glad for the excuse.
She may not be allowed to look into whatever was going on, and she may not be allowed to read Alden's mind. But maybe she could find something out just by being around. It was the best plan she had. 29. Dex refused to have anything to do with Fitz and Bianna, so Sophie had to alternate spending time with him at Havenfield and hanging out at Everglen. Alden and Della were gone a lot, and they usually came home smelling of smoke. They never talked about it, and Sophie was too afraid to ask questions after Alden's warning. But she wasn't giving up. If she couldn't get any new information, maybe she could make sense of the pieces she already had. She tried to fit the clues together. Project Moonlark had to have something to do with the Black Swan, whatever that was. And they had to be behind the fires. But why set fires, especially around humans? What would that accomplish? The fires consumed her thoughts so much they crept into her dreams. Vivid nightmares of her human family, trapped in their old house, surrounded by fire. She knew it wasn't real, but she still woke up shivering every night. It got so bad, she slept with Iggy on her pillow so she wouldn't be alone. Pretty soon, she was counting down the days until school resumed. School was safe. She'd passed her exams. Once school started, she would have nothing to worry about.
Congratulations to everyone who passed their midterms, Dame Melina said during their first orientation. I hope you enjoyed your 6-week vacation, because it's time to get serious. Anyone who got lower than 85% on their midterms needs to step it up, or you will not pass your finals.
Sophie sighed. Aside from the 79 in alchemy, she'd received an 81 in elementalism and an 83 in physical education.
Your mentors also tell me there are 109 level 3s who haven't manifested abilities, and more than double that of level 2s, which is unacceptable. Be prepared to be pushed much harder in ability detecting from now on.
Groans chorused through the room. The next week, everyone looked sweaty and wilted as they trudged into study hall after ability detecting. Even Mirella's poofy hair had thrown in the towel and drooped against her head.
What did they do to you guys? Sophie asked.
Stuck us in an oven and roasted us for 2 hours, trying to figure out if we were frosters?
Dex grumbled.
Which none of us were, because frosting is a stupid talent almost no one has,
Mirella added. She slumped into a chair.
What did you do in remedial studies?
Same old boring stuff.
Actually, she'd had a blast. Tiergan had her test her transmitting distance, and it was off the charts. Fitz almost had a heart attack when she transmitted into his mind from all the way across the school. She couldn't blame him for his surprise. Even Tiergan didn't know that was possible. but she'd never forget the way his mind actually jerked when she reached it. She hoped he hadn't peed his pants. She fought off her smile, feeling guilty that everyone else suffered while she had fun.
What are Frosters?
Dex rested his cheek against the table.
Cryokinetics. They freeze things by manipulating the ice particles in the air. It's totally useless. I don't know why they even test us for it.
They have to test us for everything,
Jency reminded him.
That's not true. They don't test us for pyrokinesis,
Dex argued.
Yeah, because that's a forbidden talent, Morella said.
There are forbidden talents? Sophie asked.
Only one,
Dex told her.
Mesmers and inflictors are closely monitored, but pyrokinetics are forbidden.
Why?
Too dangerous.
How could it be more dangerous than someone who can inflict pain?
Because fire's too unpredictable. No one can truly control it.
Plus, people died, Morella added.
Who?
Dex asked.
Morella shrugged. I don't know. I heard 5 people died, and that's why it's forbidden now.
But how can they forbid something like that? Sophie asked.
Isn't that kind of like forbidding someone to breathe?
Nah, some talents happen on their own as you get older, like telepathy and empathy. Others you would never know you have if something didn't trigger them.
Sophie shook her head.
That still seems wrong. It's like they're not allowed to be who they are.
Oh, relax. There's only been, like, 12. Ever. So it's not exactly a huge problem.
I guess.
She wasn't really listening anymore, because she'd remembered what Alvar had said about the fires.
Conspiracy theory.
Could a pyrokinetic be part of that? It was an interesting idea, and left her head spinning for the rest of study hall. But she needed more information. She swung by the library to see if they had any books on the subject. Surely Alden wouldn't mind her doing a little innocent research at school, right? The level 2 library didn't have any books on pyrokinetics. Neither did level 3's. The level 6 librarian finally told her most books on the subject were banned, but she took Sophie's name and promised to check the archives and send anything she found to Sophie's locker. In the meantime, Sophie wondered if Grady and Edeline had any books in the libraries at Havenfield. The main library downstairs was a bust, but Grady and Edeline had to have personal libraries in their offices on the 2nd floor. Seemed like the perfect place to hide banned books. Only problem, even after living there for a little more than 5 months, Sophie wasn't sure she was allowed in that section of the house, and she didn't know how they'd react if they caught her. Especially after Alden's warning. But she couldn't let it go, so she waited until Grady and Edeline were busy outside with a pair of direwolves and snuck upstairs for a quick peek, promising herself she'd be careful not to leave any trace she'd been there. The first door she tried was Grady's office. Rolled scrolls were stuffed in bins, a mountain of paperwork littered the desk, and books were shoved haphazardly on the shelves. No pictures, no knickknacks, nothing personal to make the place feel warm. But there were empty spaces where they might have been. The bookshelves were filled with law and history books. They probably talked about pyrokinetics in there somewhere, but Sophie didn't have time to scan through them all. The scrolls tempted her, but they were rolled up too tight to read, and she was afraid he'd be able to tell if she unrolled them. She wasn't brave enough to flip through the papers on his desk either, in case they were in a special order. She hoped Edeline's office would be more helpful. She'd assumed the door across the hall was Edeline's, so she almost gasped when she stepped into a dim bedroom. Lacy curtains blocked most of the sunlight. Crystal chandeliers were dulled with dust, and there were scattered remnants left behind from childhood. Stuffed unicorns, Prattle's pins strung on lanyards, dolls, books. On the desk was a framed photo of a beautiful girl. Jolie. Her blonde hair hung in soft curls to her waist, and she had Edeline's turquoise eyes and Grady's striking bone structure. She wore a white, level 6 uniform in the photo, so she was probably 16 when it was taken. Next to it was another picture. Grady, Edeline, and Jolie, when she was close to Sophie's age, standing in a breathtaking garden. It was the old them, happy, wearing the capes of the nobility, before their lives were struck by tragedy. Sophie could have spent the whole day drinking in the glimpse of who they used to be, but she knew this was the worst place they could find her. She peeled her eyes away and left. The last room had obviously been Edeline's office, but it had turned into the place where leftover junk went to die. Stacks of locked trunks littered the floor, covered with piles of folded linens, unopened presents, and random objects she couldn't identify. A huge bin of unopened letters blocked most of the doorway, so Sophie couldn't get inside, which was fine. The bookshelves were full of thick, dusty volumes, and anything she disturbed would be too obvious. She'd have to figure out another way to find books on pyrokinetics. Maybe Biana would let her look through the library at Everglen. But she'd have to come up with a good excuse, in case Alden found them in there. She was on murky ground, but she was close to something. She could feel it. Her mind wouldn't let her drop it until she figured out what it was. 30. Sophie gagged as she licked open her locker.
Elwyn's choice again? She whined to Dex.
In the 3 weeks since midterm, they'd already suffered through burned hair and sweaty feet flavors. Elwyn was on a roll. Dex plugged his nose as he licked his panel, but he still winced.
Ugh, that's exactly how I imagine a fart would taste.
Sophie giggled and grabbed a small scroll waiting on her top shelf. A special assignment from the Universe Mentors. Each list had 6 stars that fit some sort of pattern, and each prodigy was supposed to bottle a sample of the starlight from each, figure out what the pattern was, and choose a 7th star that fit with the others. She and Dex had plans to work together that night. Dex took her to Moonglade, a wide, round meadow filled with thousands of fireflies flickering in the darkness.
Everyone else goes to Siren Rock, Dex explained, as he set up the stellarscope,
which looked like a bent, upside-down spyglass.
But it's so crowded there, it's hard to find a space to work. Plus, the view's better here.
He pointed to the sky, where billions of stars sparkled through the inky black, then handed her a thick wad of star maps.
Finding stars takes forever, so let's tag-team it. First star on my list is Amaranthus.
Sophie stared at the sky, following trails she'd already memorized.
It's right there. 4th star to the left of Lambentine.
Dex's jaw dropped.
How did you do that?
Photographic memory, remember?
I know, but the stars?
She nodded smugly.
Wow. Well, awesome.
He stuffed the maps into his bag and attached a small glass bottle to a spout at the wider end of the stellarscope.
Want to go first?
She took the scope from him and held it up to her eyes.
How does this work?
It's easy. You find the star and use the knobs to isolate it.
He came up behind her and used one arm to level the scope. His other arm wrapped around her, and his hand slid her fingers down to a cluster of dials.
Sorry, is this okay?
He asked, as she stiffened.
Sure.
But it was strange having him so close. She could feel her cheeks warm, and was glad it was too dark for him to see her blush. Dex cleared his throat.
Did you find Amaranthus?
Yep.
Good. Then turn the knobs until you see the star change color. And flip the lever by your thumb. The stellarscope will do the rest.
She did as he said, and a bright purple flash filled the bottle. The glass clinked as the scope sealed the light in. It only took them a few minutes to fill bottles with scarlet light from Rubini, yellow light from Aurora, pale blue light from Azulejo, deep orange light from Cobertola, and dark blue light from Indigene. Dex stared at the six twinkling bottles, scratching his head.
I don't see a pattern.
It's the colors of the spectrum.
She rearranged the bottles in the right order.
Red, orange, yellow, blue, indigo, and violet. What's missing?
Green. Can you find Zeleny?
She pointed to an isolated star to the left.
There.
He bottled the deep green glow.
This'll be the first time I get it right. I usually just pick a random star and try to bluff.
Sophie laughed and dug her list from her pocket. Her stars were much harder to find, and she had to really push her memory. But eventually, she had bottles of silver, gold, black, white, copper, and green light.
Any idea what the pattern is? Dex asked.
I'm not sure.
Something felt familiar. A shadow of an idea, not formed enough to make sense. She poured through her memories, scrounging for the clue she was missing. The pieces clicked.
Elementine!
What's the pattern?
I don't know, but I know Elementine is right.
She grabbed the stellarscope.
Are you sure? I've never heard of it before.
I think I would know better than you. Besides, why would I make that up?
Good point.
She followed strange trails through the stars as the minutes ticked by.
I know it's there.
She focused on a dark space and fiddled with the dials.
I don't see anything, Dex told her.
I think it's just really far away.
More turning and adjusting. Still nothing. Dex was getting fidgety when she finally said,
There!
And flipped the latch. The stellarscope hummed, then turned white hot. Sophie yelped, dropping the scope.
What happened?
Ow, ow, ow!
She waved her hands, trying to cool the burning, but the pain made her eyes water.
Let me see.
Dex took a jar of moonlight from his bag and grabbed her wrists, shining the light on them.
Whoa! Are you okay?
She wanted to be brave, but her eyes teared when she saw the purple welts on her palms.
What should I do?
Dex asked, sounding frantic. She tried to think through the pain. She could go home, but she wasn't sure how Grady and Edeline could help. What she really needed was a doctor. Her face fell as she realized what she had to do.
Can you get my imparter from my satchel?
She'd been carrying it with her ever since the cheating disaster. Dex dug through her bag until he found the silver square.
Who are we calling?
She sighed.
Elwyn.
31.
Now you're calling me at home and dragging me out of bed? Maybe it was better when you were afraid of me,
Elwyn teased. His smile faded when she showed him the blackish-purple blisters on her hands.
How did you do that?
I was just trying to bottle the light from Elementine.
Elementine?
He pulled a small pot from his satchel and spread a thick green salve over the burns.
Never heard of it.
I told you it wasn't real. Dex said.
But I found it, she insisted, as Elwyn sprinkled purple powder on top of the salve. The scope got really hot when I flipped the latch, and it burned me.
Elwyn wrapped her hands with thick blue cloth.
I've never heard of that happening. It's always an adventure with you, Sophie. I'll give you that.
The annoying part was that she couldn't argue. Why did weird things keep happening to her?
Is that helping the pain?
Elwyn asked.
Yes, thanks.
Good.
He poured a bottle of youth over the cloth, soaking it through.
Did you bottle the light?
I don't know.
In all the chaos, she hadn't bothered to look.
I'll check it.
Dex ran over to the scope, which was still where Sophie had dropped it.
There's something in it, but it's weird.
Don't touch it, Elwyn ordered. Last thing I need is another patient.
Sophie hung her head. I'm sorry I woke you.
Don't worry about it.
Gives me a good story to tell tomorrow.
She sighed. Morella and Keith were going to have a field day with this.
Elwyn unwrapped her hands. The blisters were gone, but the skin was red and raw. He stroked his chin.
That should have worked better.
It doesn't hurt anymore.
That's because the salve numbs you. I'm going to have to make a stronger bomb. Wait right here.
She nodded miserably.
Where would she go?
Elwyn glittered away, and Dex plopped beside her.
You don't have to wait with me.
Like I would leave you in the middle of nowhere at night, injured. What kind of friend do you think I am?
But you must be cold.
Nope. I can regulate my body temperature. See?
He touched her cheek, and she was surprised at how warm his skin was.
Want me to teach you how to do it tomorrow?
I can't. I'm going to Fitz and Biana's.
Ugh. Another day at the palace. Be sure to wear your crown.
Are you ever going to stop that?
Doesn't look like it.
They're my friends. I wish you could be a little nicer about it.
Hey, I hold a lot back.
She laughed.
Somehow I doubt that.
He ripped a handful of grass and tossed it away.
You just like seeing Wonder Boy. Please don't tell me you have some stupid crush on him.
Of course not.
She could feel her cheeks blush and was glad once again for the darkness. Dex ripped more grass by the roots.
Then what is it? Why do you like him?
He's the one who found me.
As soon as the words left her mouth, she realized her slip. Dex stiffened.
That's a story you haven't told me.
I know.
She tried not to talk about her past. It brought up too many questions she didn't have the answers to.
There's a lot you don't tell me, isn't there? Like your session in the level 4 wing. It's not remedial studies, is it?
He waited for her to deny it. She didn't.
What do you really do there?
I can't tell you.
Does Wonder Boy know?
She sighed.
Yes.
He was quiet for a long time, mutilating more innocent blades of grass.
Well, that stinks.
I didn't tell him, if that's what you're thinking. He's just involved, so he gets to know certain things.
They sat in silence, destroying the grass and waiting for the other to speak. Dex finally sighed.
I'm sorry. I'm being a jerk.
I'm sorry, too. I hate keeping secrets from you. You're my best friend.
His head snapped up.
I'm your best friend?
She shrugged, looking away.
If you want to be.
Are you kidding? Of course.
She smiled.
Do you think you could do me a favor then?
Sure, anything.
Could you try to keep the Fitz bashing to a minimum?
Ugh, anything but that.
Please, Dex.
He glowered at the ground.
Fine. But I'm only doing it for you. I still won't like him.
She smiled at his stubbornness.
Thank you. That means a lot.
Light flashed in front of them, and Elwyn reappeared, clutching a pot of ointment.
Okay. Let's see those hands again.
Sophie crinkled her nose as he spread the golden sludge across the burns.
Ew, Elwyn. What's in that stuff?
Trust me, you don't want to know. It needs to sit for a minute. So let's see this starlight you bottled.
He knelt next to the stellarscope, and his brows furrowed.
What is it?
Dex asked.
I don't know.
He tapped the bottle quickly with one fingertip.
It's cold. What star did you say this came from?
Elementine.
Doesn't sound familiar. Well, don't do anything with this until you show Sir Aston. And be careful.
He gently removed the bottle from the scope and handed it to Dex. Then he wrapped the bottle in one of his rags and tucked it in Sophie's bag. He checked Sophie's hands again, and this time, the burns were totally gone.
Thanks, Elwyn, she mumbled.
That's what I'm here for. You guys okay now?
Yep, we're going home.
Good. Come by my office tomorrow, Sophie. I want to make sure I didn't miss anything.
She sighed. He should set up a permanent spot for her.
All right. My work is done here. Get home safe. Oh, and Sophie, better wash your hands. Like, 20 times.
Sophie didn't feel like getting into the whole long story, so when Grady and Adeline asked how her night went, she just shrugged and said, good. Then she took the longest, hottest, soapiest shower of her life. She planned to tell them in the morning, but one of the griffins escaped, so she figured she'd tell them about it when she got home. Maybe by then her mentors would have explained what went wrong. She got to school early to stop by Elwyn's office discreetly. He was pleased with the healing, but made her drink sour medicine just to be safe. She planned to ask Sir Conley about the strange starlight during elementalism, but he had her bottling flames, and she almost caught her cape on fire. Twice. He gave her a thick, boring-looking book on fire-catching to read before finals. Stupid cape. The worry caught up with her in the cafeteria. It seemed she was the only one who had any problems with the starlight assignment, which did not bode well for her grade. It didn't help that as soon as she set out her bottles, Sir Aston frowned.
Where's your seventh star?
She bit her lip. She'd been hoping he wouldn't count. Something weird happened. The stellarscope burned me when I bottled it. His eyes widened, but he shook his head.
No, that's absurd. It couldn't be.
Do you want to see the bottle? I think there's something wrong with it, but you tell me.
She dug the bundle out of her satchel. The icy chill stung her fingers even through the thick fabric, and it was heavier than the other bottles, almost like there was something solid inside. The glow was blinding when she unwrapped it. Sir Aston was always pale, but he looked downright ghostly as he jumped back and screamed, "Don't move!" She froze.
Should I wrap it back up?
I said, don't move. I need to think.
He started pacing, mumbling incoherently.
Okay, will you please tell me what this is? You're freaking me out.
He laughed darkly.
Have you ever heard of quintessence?
The fifth element? I thought that was just a myth.
I'm sure what you've heard is a myth. But the element is real. Quintessence is light in its truest, most powerful form. Under the right conditions, that little bottle could blow up this whole building. Or worse.
She gulped. What was worse than blowing up a building?
What do we do?
I have no idea.
He wrung his hands.
How did this happen?
I don't know. I was just trying to fit the pattern.
The pattern was metals. The stars on the list have metallic-toned light. You should have bottled something bronze or brass. Not this.
He gestured wildly at the bottle. Her cheeks flamed. Now that he mentioned it, the pattern did seem pretty obvious.
I'm sorry. For some reason, I thought I needed to find Elementine.
He froze.
Where did you learn that name?
I don't know. Probably from one of those star maps I memorized.
No, Sophie. I never taught you that name. No one teaches that name.
His voice was hushed, barely audible. That explained why Dex and Elwyn had never heard of it. But I had to learn it here, she insisted. How else would I know it?
I have no idea. Elementine is one of the 5 unmapped stars. Only the counselors know their exact locations, and no one is allowed to bottle their light.
He swallowed loudly.
You've broken a very serious law, Sophie. This will merit a tribunal to decide how you should be punished.
32. The hearing was in Eternalia, in Tribunal Hall. A blue banner flew from the dome, just like it had the first time Fitz took Sophie there. But this time, it was for her. Sophie sat next to Alden on a raised platform facing the 12 empty thrones of the counselors. Behind her sat Grady and Edeline, Dex, Sir Aston, Dame Alina, and Elwyn. Everyone remotely involved with the Quintessence incident. The rest of the enormous room was empty. The proceedings had been closed to the public, a rare procedure for a tribunal, but Alden explained that anything involving Quintessence had to be kept top secret. Each throne had a name carved across the top. Orlais had velvet cushions and a heart-shaped back covered in pink tourmaline. Kenric's was sturdy and simple, made of polished wood encrusted with large pieces of amber. Bronte's was plain silver, dotted with onyx. The rest were names she'd never heard. Clarette, Velia, Tarek, Leora, Emery, Ramira, Derek, Noland, Zarina. Their names alone were intimidating. She tugged out an eyelash and flicked it away. A mere 2 hours had passed since the moment Sophie showed Sir Aston the glowing bottle, but it felt like everything had changed. Foxfire was evacuated, a first in its 3,000-year history. A special task force moved the Quintessence to an undisclosed location. Now she sat in the capital city, on trial for violating a major law. Bronte was probably salivating over the chance to convict her. Sophie sat up straighter as a dozen goblins marched into the room and stationed themselves in front of the thrones. She remembered them from Luminaria, but she'd forgotten how huge they were.
Bodyguards of the counselors, Alden explained.
Her eyes focused on the strange sword-like weapons slung through their belts, and she couldn't help wondering what the counselors needed protection from. Alden was always saying how safe their world was. A loud fanfare blasted through the room, and everyone rose as the counselors appeared in front of their thrones, dripping in jewels, draped in gleaming silver capes, and crowned with circlets. They made human royalty look like amateurs. Sophie's lunch churned in her stomach.
Please be seated,
announced a counselor with shoulder-length black hair and eyes that matched the sapphires in his crown. His throne said, Emery, across the top.
Thank you for coming on such short notice. We shall begin with you, Miss Foster.
She stood and gave the world's most ungraceful curtsy. Orlai moved to Sophie's side, placing one hand on her shoulder and holding her hand with the other.
Answer my questions honestly, and there will be no problems,
Emery warned. Sophie nodded, the fear so consuming she wondered if she would be sick. She kept her eyes away from Bronte, knowing if she caught his cold gaze,
she might lose it.
Where did you learn of the existence and location of Elementine?
I don't know.
Her voice trembled. Emery glanced at Oralai. She nodded.
What made you look for it?
My universe homework.
Sarastin coughed behind her, like he was unhappy with her answer.
What was it about your homework that made you think of it?
Emery asked.
Honestly? It just sounded right.
Oralai nodded again, and Sophie finally understood. Oralai was reading her emotions. A living, breathing lie detector.
Have you any idea what to use quintessence for?
Emery asked.
Consider your answer carefully, Miss Foster. This is crucial.
She racked her brain. There was something there, an idea so fuzzy she couldn't make sense of it. I don't know.
Oralai?
Emery asked when Oralai frowned.
She's confused, she said in her fragile voice, but not lying.
Emery nodded and closed his eyes, placing his hands against his temples. The silence stretched endlessly, and Sophie wondered if she'd said something wrong. Finally, Emery opened his eyes.
Thank you, Miss Foster. You may be seated.
Her legs felt like jello, but somehow she hobbled back to her seat beside Alden.
Sarastin,
Emery said, and Sarastin jumped out of his chair. Oralai returned to her throne. A telepath could monitor Sarastin's thoughts for honesty. His mind wasn't impenetrable, like Sophie's.
What stars was she assigned?
They were,
Sarastin cleared his throat and fidgeted.
I believe they were.
Emery's sigh echoed off the walls.
Do you remember, Miss Foster?
She leaped to her feet and gave another awkward curtsy.
Yes, it was Argento, Oropharia, Penisi, Makariron, Stygus, and Acromion.
Emery closed his eyes.
Can you repeat those one more time? Slower?
She did, noticing that Kenric was plotting the stars on a map. He sucked in a breath.
Who created this list?
Emery demanded, glancing at Kenric.
I'm not certain,
Sarastin admitted, cowering.
All the universe mentors submit them, and it wasn't one of the lists I made.
That's convenient,
Bronte scoffed, and Sophie's gaze followed his voice, against her better judgment. She shivered. He looked even more frightening seated at his jeweled throne. Emery held up his hand, and Bronte fell silent.
Who assigned her that list?
The velvet folds of his voice hardened, but his face remained expressionless.
The lists are assigned at random,
Sarastin stammered.
It was pure chance.
Emery closed his eyes, rubbing his temples.
Are you aware of any connection between those stars and Elementine?
Sarastin shook his head.
I know nothing about Elementine, except its name.
Thank you.
Emery motioned for everyone to sit. The room fell silent again.
What's going on? Sophie whispered to Alden.
Emery mediates their discussion telepathically.
He'll only speak once they've reached a consensus, so that the Council always presents a united front.
She supposed that made sense, but she felt sorry for Emery. He looked like he would need some strong aspirin after this.
Enough, Emery ordered, holding his hands out like stop signs after what felt like an eternity.
We have reached a decision. It's not unanimous.
He glared at Bronte.
But in this situation, it does not need to be. Please rise, Miss Foster.
She leaned on Alden for support.
What you did was very dangerous and violates one of our most fundamental laws. But we do not believe your actions were intentional. And because of that, you will not be held accountable. You will return to Foxfire tomorrow, and no mention will be made of this tribunal.
Sophie released the breath she'd been holding. Alden squeezed her hand. She was safe. It was over.
No one will know the details of this incident, or of Miss Foster's involvement,
Emery continued, addressing the others in the room.
The official story will be that a suspicious substance was found, removed, and destroyed. No further details will be given. Is that understood?
Everyone murmured agreement.
Good. And Lord Alden.
Alden held Emery's gaze and nodded.
Thank you for your assistance with this matter.
Emery motioned for everyone to rise.
That concludes the tribunal.
I'm so sorry, Sophie said for the millionth time to Grady, Edeline, and Dex as they met her and Alden outside Tribunal Hall. She wished she'd never have to set foot in the terrifying building again. But she knew she'd be back at the end of the year. Her knees shook at the thought.
Dex grinned.
Are you kidding? This has been the coolest day ever. I finally got to see Eternalia. Foxfire was evacuated. I missed the Great Gulon incident 3 years ago, but I bet it had nothing on this.
What was the Great Gulon incident? She asked.
Alden cleared his throat.
Perhaps we can discuss this another time. There's still a few things Sophie and I need to do.
Grady and Alden exchanged a quick look, and Grady nodded.
We'll take Dex home. Where should I tell his family he's been all afternoon?
The adults got their stories straight, and Dex leaned toward Sophie, a huge smile dimpling his cheeks.
Will Fitz get to know what really happened today?
I doubt it.
Excellent. I finally know something Wonder Boy doesn't.
She couldn't help laughing.
Come on, Dex. Time to go,
Grady interrupted. He looked at Sophie and smiled.
See you at home, kiddo.
Everyone flashed away, leaving Sophie alone with Alden.
Come on, Sophie. Let's take a walk.
33. Alden led her along the banks of the river that cut a winding path through the heart of Eternalia.
Do you know what these trees are called?
He asked, pointing to the mammoth trunks all around them. Burnt sienna bark braided up to the hunter green leaves, which fanned out like paintbrushes.
No,
Sophie admitted. She'd seen them around. There were even a few at Havenfield. But she never thought to ask what they were.
Their full name is Purfuliage Palmae, but everyone calls them the Pures, because their leaves filter the air, keeping out any pollution or impurities. Every house and city has at least one to keep the air clean. And with so many growing here, Eternalia has the freshest, crispest air in the world.
He frowned at the sky, where a tinge of gray fuzzed through the blue.
Well, it does when there isn't a fire nearby, but that's not important. Do you wonder why I ask?
She nodded.
I was thinking how strange it is that you don't know the name of one of our most common trees. And yet you knew the name and location of a star only a handful of us have ever heard of. And only the counselors know how to find.
She stared at her feet. I don't know why. Honestly.
I know, Sophie. No one thinks what happened is your fault. But we are concerned about what else might be stored away in that mind of yours.
Her head snapped up. You think there's other stuff?
It's possible. You knew how to read the cipher runes on those scrolls, didn't you?
Her blood ran cold. Was that what Quinlan meant about her being a keeper all those months ago? But how would it get there?
We don't know.
The hesitation in his voice said otherwise, and it made her desperate to shove into his thoughts. But she was in enough trouble already, and maybe she didn't want to know.
Is that what Emery said to you at the end?
She remembered Alden's quick nod.
He told you something telepathically, didn't he?
You are observant, aren't you?
He sighed.
He was giving me another instruction for you.
Her stomach lurched.
Is it bad?
Of course not. Come with me.
He took her hand and leaped them to the edge of Eternalia, where a row of identical crystal castles glowed pink and orange in the sunset.
Where are we?
Sophie asked, as he led her toward the farthest one.
These are the counselor's offices. You have an appointment with Counselor Tarek.
Her legs went weak with nerves, and she missed a step on the way to the door. Alden steadied her before she fell. The door opened before Alden knocked, and an elf with wavy brown hair and an emerald-encrusted circlet examined Sophie with curious, cobalt eyes. She dropped a shaky curtsy as Alden bowed.
Do you want me to stay? Alden asked.
Tarek waved him away.
It works better one-on-one. You know that.
Then I'll be back in 10 minutes.
He squeezed Sophie's shoulder.
Just relax, Sophie. No reason to worry.
She nodded, her mouth too dry to speak. Tarek led her inside, to an oval sitting room off the main entryway. He motioned for her to take a seat in one of the plush armchairs, and sat across from her.
Did Alden explain why you're here?
She shook her head, unable to find her voice. He laughed, a soft, pleasing sound, which rang off the crystal walls and lifted the heavy atmosphere of the room.
There's no need to be afraid. What's about to happen is quite an honor. Parents beg me to do this for their children, and I refuse. Causes too many problems.
He sighed.
It's quite a burden being the only descryer.
He seemed to be waiting for a response, so she nodded again.
You have no idea what that means, do you?
She hesitated a second before shaking her head.
How delightfully refreshing. It means I can sense potential. So you can see why parents are always clamoring for me to meet their children. I used to agree, but then I noticed how often it backfired. Potential is nothing. If it's never lived up to, now is it?
She cleared her throat, realizing she hadn't said a word since she'd arrived.
No. She speaks. I was beginning to wonder if you'd forgotten how.
He smiled.
I know you're nervous, Sophie, but I promise you have no reason to be. The council decided that, given today's unusual circumstances, it might be a good idea for me to see what I sense about you. It's painless, I promise. All I have to do is hold your hands and concentrate. Do you think you can handle that?
He extended his hands to hers. She hesitated half a second before placing her hands in his. A tiny part of her feared what he would find. But she also understood that this wasn't optional.